Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. I like your special little robe.
Thank you. I feel like you need one of these.
Is it Tekla?
Yeah, it's a little Tekla robe.
Why do they have such a distinctive stripe?
I know. Very comfortable and gorgeous. They also, as a hot tip, always go on sale on Essence. There's always really good Tekla sales on Essence. Yeah. Well, whenever Essence does, like, their big sale, they'll have really good pajamas in it and the robes, etc., etc. I feel like you definitely need one of these. It screams Grace O'Neill.
I need one. Our house is like such a sad state of affairs because we have one towel and a bath mat, and both are like disgusting because they're like the fake tan towel, the like Zach's hair towel.
At your house?
We don't know where the second towel went, and we've kind of not had a moment to like check in with each other. And then what we got stumped on, which I need to hear your thoughts on, is like we're looking at Tekla towels, and then I was like, you want the white ones because they look the nicest, but then they're going to get dirty and look gross, so we should get a dark towel. But then I was like, I don't want like a dark forest green towel in my house, and now I don't know. I don't want a grey towel.
Yeah. I feel like this is a hard one. I feel like white towels are just so impractical. But it's like we do have white sheets, and they're fine. But I guess towels are a bit more.
I need to take a photo because we got the Tekla sheets as well, and our pillowcases, one is like the bright white color and one is like a dark and disturbing gray, and it's Zach puts overnight conditioner on his giant head of hair and leaves it on without like a bonnet and it's just turned his pillowcase like a disgusting color.
No. What I like about Tekla sounds like we're doing a Tekla ad.
I know. I wish they'd give us free shit.
What I like about Tekla, or there's actually another really cool towel brand that I can't remember what it's called. Is it called Bana? Bana? And it's sustainable. Let me find it because I feel like it's, oh, Baina. Baina. B-A-I-N-A. So I think you'd like Baina as well. But what I love about Baina and Tekla towels is that they are colourful. Like, that's Tekla's whole thing, is the really cool colourful bedspreads and towels and stuff. So I think what you should do is, I mean, we leaned into it in too much of an intense way at my house in London and got hot pink bedspread. Hot, like, it looked, honestly, I think, Grace, if you saw it on the website Verse, what it looks like in reality, it looks like a kind of muted pink. Not that dark pink.
I haven't seen the bedspread, but I've seen the towels. And I liked the towels. I thought they were ballsy and audacious and very cool. And it made me feel like a sad little beige loser.
No.
Chuk. Maybe the answer is a stripe.
Yes. So that's what I think the answer is with Tekla, is getting either stripes or checks. Like, they're so cute. You need to get the blue with the white striped towels. Or just the similar stripe to this.
It's really nice that your robe is reminding me of something someone said about Succession, which is that Logan always wears stripes. This has nothing to do with the episode this week.
Okay.
Logan always wears suits with really thin pinstripes, and Tom always wears suits with like fat pinstripes, and that's to show that he was brought up poor.
My God.
But you've got very thin stripes on this towel.
Yes.
What do they call it? A stealth wealth robe.
Yeah. I love the little chicken Baina ones. They're really cute. And they're pretty well priced and sustainable, which is great.
Yeah. I'm really liking these.
In my home, I only have Baina towels, but I have Tekla sheets again.
So nice.
Except I got white ones because I got a red rug. Did I tell you that?
No, I love the sound of that.
There's a big red rug in my bedroom underneath my bed. Cool. And I thought that was going to be so fun and so silly, and then realized that now the only option is white sheets forever, because any other sheet looks weird. And I quite liked the idea of having a fun set of sheets.
You do have to clean them more or you feel disgusting, but it's probably a good thing.
Well, yeah. Especially with me falling over on the concrete. I was like going to wash them every day.
Oh, yeah. Shadow.
I know. What's been happening in your world?
I got to France yesterday and we landed at quite late at night, and the only thing open was Five Guys to get Uber Eats. And I was really excited. And I ordered it, and I don't know what I did, but it came, and I took it out of the bag. And I was like to Zach, they serve burgers in a tinfoil tray here. And he was like, what? And then I opened it, and I ordered them both without bread.
What?
So it was like a tinfoil tray with like a burger patty, a slice of cheese, a pile of fresh onions, and like for Zach, a slice of tomato and some lettuce.
How did you do that? That feels very French. A deconstructed burger. It's disgusting.
Who would ever ask for a burger? I know it's like a protein guy, gym guy thing to do, but I accidentally hit it while tapping extras because I just didn't know. And I was like, it shouldn't be that easy to get a cheeseburger without bread. They should ask you like four times.
Are you sure? Like when you're trying to cancel your Amazon and Audible subscription?
Yeah. Literally, and then we just sat. Zach was so angry at me, and we just sat. It was like a prison meal. It was so disgusting.
Remember when you ordered us Thai and you forgot to order the rice?
Yes, I got in trouble for so much of this shit. I remember once I ordered curry and forgot to get naans, and my mum like actually lost her shit at me. It was really funny.
Yeah,
what the fuck is wrong with you? But that's reasonable.
It's unacceptable. That's your ADD.
How are you? What's happening in California?
Did a little road trip to San Francisco, which for anybody listening and to you, nobody calls it San Fran. Do not call it San Fran.
Where did that come from? Why do we say San Fran?
It obviously rhymes, and I guess people used to call it that, but it's like very not okay. They hate it. You're embarrassing. Do not call it San Fran. It's SF if you're going to shorten it.
Did you call it San Fran to someone?
I call it San Fran all the time. It just blurts out of my mouth. I can't not. I'm like, San Fran, San Fran. It's SF or San Francisco. That's it.
SF? I don't believe it.
Just call it San Francisco.
SF could mean so many things.
Like what?
Like this. Let's move on.
I did a road trip up there. Got really bored of driving within about an hour. So I forced my boyfriend to drive the whole way, and then haven't heard the end of it. And
yeah, I romanticize road trips because I don't have my license.
Yeah, it's so fun when you're in the passenger seat and you're just like a little sing along. I was like, let's play Olivia Rodrigo.
There's no stakes as a passenger and you can fall asleep.
Yeah, I don't do that. I think people who know how to drive have better etiquette than people who don't as a passenger. because I wouldn't. I basically so like wouldn't fall asleep because I'd feel too bad. I also try to stay off my phone. Although yesterday I got caught in a shopping spiral for about an hour. I thought I put my head down for like 5 minutes and then he was like, it's been
look up and it's
been 4 days. Yeah, we've finished the trip and we're heading home. And I'm like still purchasing the boots. And yeah, I mean, it's nice. San Francisco is hard because it's similar to LA. It's just kind of like really sad because there's so much poverty and homelessness, and it's just gotten worse over the years. So it's like, yeah, it's a beautiful city in so many parts, but it's also an intense city.
I've heard that, like, much like LA post COVID, have we ever talked about this, like why it's so much worse post COVID, and how all these states basically during COVID lockdowns like paid their homeless population like for a Greyhound ticket for them to just go to California, because they said basically there's this disease, it's cold outside in our state, you're better off being somewhere sunny. And basically there was just this extreme influx of like the homeless, especially, I mean, just homeless people, it's usually more men than women, arrived at the same time, mainly in San Fran, but San Fran and California. And they've literally, I just said San Fran, I'm sorry.
I know, it rolls off the tongue.
I feel like, why do we feel like, why do I feel like I'm a local saying it? Like, oh, San Fran.
I know.
That's troubling. But yeah, all these people arrived in SF and basically erected like a tent city that is tens of thousands of people. And there's just no mental health infrastructure. There's no system for coping with it. And it's just created this obscene. Yeah,
it's so sad. It's also obviously, I guess this makes sense, but I think it just like pays to note here that the reason that it's so much more kind of intense and dangerous and like prominent than anywhere else in the world is because of the healthcare system here, and because people who have mental health issues that they could otherwise likely get treated and likely be okay and continue being a functioning member of society in other countries where they can get help, they can't get that here. So it's like you can go so quickly from just from living a normal life to being unhoused. And that's the sad part about it. And that's why so many of the people you see here look so much more mentally unwell than unhoused people in other countries. It's just, yeah.
It's fucked. I always remember when I was in LA like years ago, like 10 years ago, I was riding a bus and got talking to this guy. He must have been in his 40s or 50s. He kind of had to sit with his leg out in the aisle. And he basically just explained to me that he'd been a cab driver in whatever, 20 years earlier, in his 20s or 30s. Had a car crash that wasn't his fault, didn't have health insurance or insurance for his car. His leg was mangled and basically he couldn't afford, he was like bankrupted by the medical care it just required to look after him in the aftermath of the accident. He didn't have insurance or enough money to get the leg fixed, so he couldn't drive. He lost his car because of the, he didn't have insurance to fix his car. And basically just then it was this descent into homelessness because he couldn't do other work. He wasn't subsidized by the government. And you talk to him and he's just this like lovely, relatable man who is, yeah, experiencing homelessness through something that is not his fault in any way. And I just remember being like, America is just a mess with that shit. Like the knock-on effect of that many micro things happening on a macro level is just fucking insane.
Yeah, and it's also from the outside, you could be quick to just be like, well, he should have had healthcare. Healthcare here is so expensive. For me to have, yeah, like basically the minimum healthcare, it's $380 US a month. And that's not including dental or car insurance. So I have car insurance on top of that, which is another like 200, and then dental on top of that. So it's just like, if you're a cab driver, you literally can't afford to pay rent and have health insurance.
Yeah, it's
nuts.
Nuts. Speaking of someone who has had a heap of misfortune placed upon him, I saw A Little Life on the weekend.
Yes.
The play.
Segue.
I went with a couple of girlfriends and we had a spare ticket at the last minute, and so I posted on Instagram about it, and an AWD girlie who just moved to London came, which was really precious.
Oh, so gorgeous.
Shout out to Sash. It was very, very cute and depressing. It's like such a weird way to meet someone for the first time.
Yeah.
Because you're like sitting in close proximity to this hideous thing. But the play, I assume a chunk of people listening have read it. We won't talk about it for too long, but it was 3 hours and 40 minutes long. And it was a fucking grim slog, as you can expect.
Mm.
It was directed by this guy from the Netherlands, I think, and they brought it to the UK, and he's kind of famous for being quite unflinching with special effects on set and stuff. So it was like really well done, I think, and the actor James Norton was fucking amazing. All the actors were. But I think it actually just reminded me of all the like of the problems I had with the book, and I know I'm in the minority here. Big time. I think she's such a beautiful writer. But there almost comes a point where, like, you can't cry anymore because, like, the suffering is just getting so gratuitous to me that I'm, like, I'm actually past the point of finding this heartbreaking, and I'm just finding it, like, sadistic slash
yeah.
somehow unrealistic, which, I know most people don't feel that way.
I get what you mean. I think what I loved about the book was the writing, for sure.
Mm.
But I agree with you. I got basically halfway and was like, could be done. I mean, I can't actually
remember.
Yeah, I can't actually remember what else happens. But yeah.
But basically, it's like you're watching it and something happens and then something happens and then something happens. And at the start, you're like, this is so heartbreaking, and like cycles of trauma and thing. And then it just gets to a point where the shit becomes kind of deranged. And I'm like, I feel like no one talks about that part of it. I think everyone has such a soft spot for it because they love her writing and love her and want to support it. But it's fucking crazy. The amount of like car crashes and...
It's such a random book to have gone off for us, for all the girlies to be like sharing like a trend.
There's actually, when I looked it up, been some criticism of it for how it portrays gay men, like that it's a very old-fashioned idea of just heaping suffering on gay men over and over and over again. But I don't know.
Interesting. And less depressing news.
Yes.
And less depressing news specifically for those who live in Nam and Melbourne, Australia. You beautiful girlies get a discount code, a special little discount code to Liz Kingsman's One Woman Show, which we're doing directly through Liz because we love her. No sponsorship this time, just the girls supporting the girls. She said, she emailed us, she messaged us and just said that she's doing this little mini run of shows for 2 weeks in Melbourne. It started on April 11th and she's just producing it herself. So wanted to know, and said like she was so grateful for all the girls that came in Sydney. And then said she wanted to know if we would share a discount code. And originally she wanted the code to be girlies.
Yay.
But the box office was being so annoying. So they just set up an actual discount link, which I have put on After Work Drinks podcast Instagram account. If you don't follow us, what are you doing? And I saved it in the highlights. So you can click
Gorgeous.
Through there.
A special share it with night your mom. Out at the theater. A happy night.
Share it with your friends.
Link up with some AWD girls.
So many people messaged and they were like, God damn, we've already bought tickets.
We should just like mention a pub or something nearby and be like, if you're an AWD girly, have drinks there beforehand.
Yeah, actually, if someone in Melbourne can find a cute
organize
pub
that
near the venue, then we'll share it. No, because someone also DM'd us and said, any other AWD girls going on this night to link up with? And so I'm already facilitating. We're already liaising.
So gorgeous. Can't wait to hear everyone's reactions. It is as we have said multiple times, it is so good.
So yes, you should go. Very funny. So that'll be a fun night out. So when I went to for this road trip, I was trying to not listen to Case File, which lasted most of the way.
What did you crack with?
It was an episode, actually, I think it's kind of a famous line. It was an episode about some guy called Bradley Murdoch in Australia or something, who like went crazy and used to drive, he used to do a drug run from Alice Springs back to somewhere.
Oh yeah, the Wolf Creek guy.
Is that the Wolf Creek
That's
guy?
That's what Wolf Creek's based off, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He's from WA, oh I think, God. So he's really famous, and when I grew up, everyone knew him. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I can't believe I just listened to that, not putting two and two together. I was like, this is crazy. Why does Australia have so many men who like stalk people in cars in the truck? Oh my God, I feel like trauma forming that I had listened to that yesterday. It was 2 hours long, and that's why we were like, this is such a long episode.
That's the Peter Falconio murder, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. That was fucking huge when I was growing up.
So I had never heard of any of this.
Yeah, but I think Wolf Creek was an amalgamation of this and one other, and Ivan Milat. So it's a mix of both. Oh my God. But yeah. Yeah, it's a horrible story. And they didn't believe his gorgeous little wife?
Yeah. I know, it made me think about Amanda Knox when I was in the car. I was like, justice for Amanda Knox. The media is so crazy. Pinning it on the girls because they're like forgetting a few bits and pieces and wearing cute t-shirts.
I know, God forbid you be cute and have a heinous crime committed to you. The media's like, okay, let's ruin her life even more.
The media's like absolute whore. So yeah, we cracked and listened to that. And it was a good one because we were driving like at night. So it was scary.
It's terrible. It's so brave. Such a brave girl.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I put up a thing asking for podcast recs, and in a really hilarious fashion, pretty much every podcast rec was something that I couldn't listen with my boyfriend in the car because he would like throw a fit. They all sound so good, but they all sound so silly. But a couple of people sent in The Witch Trials of J.K. Rowling, which reminded me that I meant to speak to you about this once I'd finished it. And this is the podcast series that came out like in February, I think. And it's a 7-part series. And it is the first long form interview J.K. Rowling has given, first proper kind of thing she's really said, other than releasing her big essay about it, right? About mm-hmm. the trans conversation and her being kind of labeled since 2019 when she released the first of two tweets, kind of Queen Turf by the world, and becoming like this basically the most famous face of like the anti-trans movement.
I remember like hearing the podcast go back and outline the timing of her tweets and the initial tweets. It just reminded me so much. I remember being with you at the Wing, this was pre-COVID, and her tweeting about it, and I remember literally never my face crumpling. But I just remember not even getting what she was talking about, which, like, we'll go into still not getting. But, like, this idea of a TERF, trans exclusion, that was so out of my field of, like, vocabulary or reference or understanding. It was just not in the culture in any way. Like, I think that was one of the biggest takeaways I had, was how much her tweeting and being the face of this has turned this into, like, a fucking culture wars hot topic conversation. It just wasn't. And maybe it would have become inevitably in some way, but, like, that tweet really is the start of all of this.
Exactly. And I think we'll get into it as we discuss the podcast, but I think that kind of is, like, the crux of it in a way. I think so for a bit of personal background, which I'm not sure how much I've ever talked about it on the podcast, but, like, millions and millions of other kids worldwide, I was the biggest Harry Potter fan in the world, like, lining up outside of the bookstores before the stores open. It was the reason I wanted to become a writer. Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many, listening to this podcast as well, it really, like, hams home just how, like, life-changing and world-altering that series was for our generation specifically. Like, when I grew up, I'm pretty sure I grew up at the same age as Harry Potter. I remember being, like, 11 when the first book came out, I think. I need to, like, check that. In my brain, I was anyway. I was like, where is my Hogwarts letter?
Spiritually 11.
Spiritually 11. And, yeah, it just being, like, something that for my entire life I kept going back to. Like, it wasn't just a childhood thing. It was something I continued to read the books as I got older and older. I got my Harry Potter Deathly Hallows tattoo.
You're, like, whispering it.
When I was, like, 22 or something. Like, old enough to, like, not be a kid anymore and not be super obsessed with the books in that way. But literally got that tattoo as thinking, you should get something meaningful to you. There is nothing more meaningful to you than this book series that made you want to become a writer and, like,
yeah,
that you love more than anything. So I think with this J.K. Rowling thing, when this happened, similar, like, so many other people listening, I'm sure, and like millions and millions of people, just it was the first instance I'd ever had and still have ever had of just being like, that kind of, I hadn't understood, and I've just been thinking about it recently, that problematic faves thing in, like, a deep level, like, in the level of, like, someone who was obsessed with Michael Jackson, right? I feel like that's like the other best example. Someone who grew up with Michael Jackson, was obsessed with him, was his hero, and then hear about this, like, pedophile stuff, and that's, like, why some people still don't choose to believe it today, because they can't. And then I think it's been funny because I completely switched. Like, I'm getting my tattoo removed. I completely, like, stopped trying to think or care about the books and, like, obviously not align myself in any way with J.K. Rowling because of these harmful views and the way she's expressing them, and the damage that, like, just does to trans people. And then it's been funny because in recent months, before this podcast even came out, this new Harry Potter game came out. And so there's kind of been, like, this talk about, like, or I think I saw an article somewhere of is it possible to love Harry Potter or to separate Harry Potter from J.K. Rowling? And I've been just thinking about that in the background of my brain. And I played the game. I haven't bought it, but I played the game at a friend's house. And it felt like going back, letting yourself go back to your childhood and have so much fun. And then afterwards, I felt this huge sense of, like, shame. So much so that I called my best friend, who is also a Harry Potter lover, and I called her and I was just like, I feel really just, like, gross that I'm letting myself, like, I don't know, it felt wrong. And she was like, my thing with it, she has two young kids, and she was like, my thing with it is I wouldn't buy anything that she, like, I wouldn't buy the game because that's making money, that's, like, giving her money, which she's then spending on, like, these resources that are harmful to the trans community. I feel like I'm getting too deep before we've even gotten into the podcast, but this is, like, all before I listened to the podcast. And but she still wants her children to, like, know about Harry Potter.
Well, this is, like, I think I've revised my thinking on this a lot from when I even think about how I used to feel very hardline about like anyone who, yeah, was quote unquote problematic needing to disown their work or detach yourself from their work or ruining their work for you. And I've kind of revised that opinion, I think, in part because I have this slightly like woo-woo belief about creativity and art, that like the people that write it are just vessels. Like I'm like, I kind of feel like ideas and shit floats around in the ether and like some people are like picked to deliver it out. I think the people involved are like surplus to requirement, and our obsession with artists and turning them into demigods and putting them on pedestals is like kind of insane, because I think a lot of it is accidental. And I think you shouldn't feel the need to disown or separate yourself from something that's so meaningful to you and holds such an important place for you. You can't undo that. Like you can't undo years of like childhood love and like developing a passion for reading. And all of that stuff to me exists completely outside of J.K. Rowling. What's difficult, I think, is it's easier to do with, like for me, for example, I feel like I had this experience with loving like Woody Allen and Roman Polanski movies and just being like, I have no idea how to get my head around this. And then just deciding like, I don't care. I love them. And I'm like, I have a special relationship with them and that's my thing. But like, that's illegally downloading a movie is very different to like lining the pockets of a billionaire that's like currently doing this stuff. I think that's what's so hard about J.K. Rowling is that money is so tied to it and it's so directly tied to her. So like it, you are making a decision with your wallet when you engage with it. So,
and also like from my, what I think is like, you can't, we're not far enough along in this to separate the two.
Mm-hmm.
And she has like become, whether she likes it or not, or whether she admits it or not, this figurehead that means this thing that is very harmful to so many people. So it's like for me to be like, oh, I just love the books in my like insanely privileged position to then like share anywhere publicly that I'm like playing this game or that I'm reading the books again. I think that is, I don't actually think that's okay. I think it's okay to have like your special personal relationship with it, but I just think that that's really, I was in this like a crazy state when I was playing that game, and then posted on my Instagram story like just literally a close up of like riding a broom stick playing Quidditch, and then I felt sick to my stomach because I was like, I literally have trans friends who will see that and who would just be like, great, like you can just ignore the fact that we're like fighting for our basic human rights to like, you know, it's I don't think that's okay. I think it's like super privileged to do that.
Well, it's just more of a like, yeah, the game is interesting because it's like, under what other circumstance now would anyone feel the need to post anything aligning themselves with Harry Potter? You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, well, the game is like massive. And then now they're talking about like releasing another show or something. But anyway, back to the podcast series. So I actually found it, yeah, really emotional to listen to even like hear the music and I think I come into it with the position of like so many Harry Potter fans where you do want to, and I think this is why I really wanted to speak about it on the pod, because I think with someone like this, you do come into it, whether you like think you do or not, with this kind of not sympathetic view, but just I want to understand her. Like I, as you say, I think we give too much weight to like the creators of these things. And I think if we viewed it from your perspective, then it's like she created this thing, but this doesn't mean that she's this. I think people look at her as being this incredibly smart.
Like a genius. Yeah,
genius. And so it's like she must have some valid points to this, or you want to like listen to her more than you would listen to other people. You hold so much more space to her than you would to like say Trump, if there was a 7-episode series of him talking about why he wanted to like build a wall.
Yeah. And she positioned herself for so long as like someone, she's very much like a relic of that kind of Obama era feminist icon where, you know, she would go, like even that speech at Harvard that they played, her talking, she felt like someone, you know, the first billionaire to lose billionaire status because they gave so much money to charity. She felt like this person that was like emblematic of what it meant to be a good, like left wing, you know, feminist, stick by your values, no matter how hard it is. Like her and Emma Watson kind of had those similar vibes, I think, where we as teenage girls saw them as icons and people we wanted to emulate. And I think that makes it so much more confusing. And I think I've had the same thing as you're talking about of, and like trans people who interviewed in the podcast talk about of like wanting to just think, like give her the most charitable reading or like give her extra space or make excuses for her, or just hope that like if something is explained to her in the right way, she'll get it and everything will be fine. And I think that that in and of itself becomes, dare I say, problematic.
Yeah. Or just, I think so when I was listening to this, the biggest thought I wanted to like share, or just the biggest, like, I'm going to sound like I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to sound like I'm like teaching or preaching or like trying to come across as I like, as if I like know more. But I just mean like, I think I really have to interrogate things like this in this level of like, how is this being presented to me? Why is it being presented in this way? Why did J.K. Rowling say yes to doing this series?
Why is it called The Witch Trials of J.K.
Rowling? Why is it called The Witch Trials of J.K. Rowling? Like, that's fucked on the offset. Like, really, really kind of with everything these days, but, like, specifically with things like this, where we are coming at it from, like, and where we sit in the fight as well. It's, like, where it's, like, looking at your privileges, your biases, like, the way it's being constructed. It was a 7-episode series, and not until like one of the final episodes did they have two trans people speaking about the other side. And throughout the other 5 episodes, like when you actually listen to it, it was really angering to me because it was like giving J.K. Rowling all this entire narrative and then playing things that like spoke to her narrative, really fringe, really like terrifying, like random cases that they could find that supported her argument, never questioning it, never jumping in and like pushing back on anything she said. And I was just like, and I'm with you, which I do agree that like, or I'd like to think that if you had two people in a room with really opposing views, that like you could maybe come out with, you could maybe get somewhere. And I think that that was kind of what they tried to say that the premise of this was. They were trying to like have this discussion that talked about these like really meaty topics and kind of got through to like JK in some way, or like helped us understand in some way. But it's like that just was never the offset of the whole thing, because it was like JK Rowling, who was an expert on her, this side of the fight, and then some interviewer who's clearly not an expert on the trans side and not using any, like, it just felt like it was giving her so much space to say everything she wanted to say without challenging like any of it. And it felt really, really harmful to me.
Yeah, I my first reaction listening to it is I didn't feel as strongly about it as you do. I didn't feel that she didn't grill her or push her at all. And I did feel like they did go to lengths to give relevant context and to like push back on points that J.K. Rowling was talking about. However, I think it was done in a very limited way. And I think the podcast had, so basically the post is Megan Phelps Roper, who's like semi-famous because she did this TED talk a few years ago about leaving the Westboro Baptist Church. And she used to be one of their fucking bazillion kids, the founder's kids, and would go picket the funerals and like be disgusting. And then she would go on Twitter, and then through Twitter, she met her husband and he engaged in like critical conversation with her and made her change her mind. And now she's like a champion for compassionately engaging with people on the other side of the aisle, which I'm being like snarky about. I think it is a real thing in, I just think there are so many fucking people in the world that confuse Twitter with real life. It like does my head in, like, and I'm pretty sure that's kind of the premise of this like entire show is assuming that how people talk on Twitter is how the average person feels about.
Yes. So like, for example, anything. the amount of tweets they read out that were like threatening and, what is it? Like just like trolling.
Yeah. They were disgusting. The shit that JK Rowling's had. Yeah.
Yeah. Like they read it continued for like 3 minutes of them reading out vile tweets that have been sent to JK Rowling. And it's like this, that alone.
Natalie Wynn from ContraPoints was like, I've had death threats and like anything you can imagine on Twitter I've had hurled at me. And then she was like, oh, and I was like, why isn't she getting the fucking treatment of like, this is how bad it is for trans people in the same way.
Yeah. She's one of the two trans people that spoke on the podcast against JK Rowling. Yeah, exactly. Like that sort of stuff was really frustrating to listen to. And I just think, yeah, the way that her perspective just dominates the whole podcast is really frustrating. And it's obviously the only reason she chose to do the podcast. The only reason she chose to do it is because Megan specifically was going to host it. So she knew the way it was going to be presented. And yeah, it's just like it's easy to think of a podcast as being like a conversation, but it's not, because it's constructed and it's like an argument, like a documentary or a memoir, and it's just like kind of impossible to separate the two. And I think like at the heart of it, like what, and as the trans guests themselves were saying, like there is need for nuanced conversations around some of the points JK Rowling brings up. Like neither of us are saying in here that she's like absolute Fruit Loop freak with like no grounds to say anything she's saying. Sure, there is need for nuanced conversation.
Yeah, that was the thing I had, but like when she wrote her essay, we talked about it, and I had really not understood her perspective at all. And I remember reading the whole thing and being like, okay, I kind of like the basis of an ideology is like this idea, which is rooted in a very kind of specific era of feminism, that we have fought so hard for the hard-earned rights of like women's spaces, like domestic violence shelters, which it's true our generation takes for granted and didn't even fucking exist until the 70s. And like even like making women's bathrooms, which, you know, used to be like the source of like more crime in the past. I don't fucking know, safer. Like the basis of that, what she's saying her concern is that like predatory cis men will use any loopholes they can find to harm women. And there has been cases of that happening in jail. That's just like indisputable fact, but it's been like two people
out of,
like, to understand how insanely small that is in terms of a target thing, it's like 0.000, and like that should not happen whatsoever. But there are strategic legal legal scientific like experts who can just work this shit out quietly without it being this hot button topic issue that you're acting as if is a moral crusade of your era and is like setting women back in the part, like the way she is framing it, she's framing them A, as if they're like much bigger problems than they are, and B, using these throwaway lines, like, as you've said to me, like, but if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And like, hopefully this isn't really a problem. And I'm really well researched on this. And it's like this acting as if what she's saying doesn't have consequences and as if she doesn't understand the context of what's going on, which is like fucking the degree to which like trans rights are being eroded all over the world. She's like not speaking out about that, like very obviously and intentionally. And she is speaking out about this. And that in and of itself is like, that's your stance. And it was really frustrating that Megan, the host, didn't push her on that stuff, because I think she should have said to her, well, like these people agree with you that like, trans women in sport is nuanced and deserves further conversation. Do you still feel the same way? Like,
I think that's one of the parts that I found the most frustrating about the podcast, was like, it just felt like gaslighting, the way that JK Rowling was like, I have read all the books, I have done all the research, I want to be wrong, but I am not. And then it's like, she's saying like, but I have listened to the side. And it's just like, if you'd listened to the side, if you really cared about this community the way you say you care about this, the way you keep saying you care about this community, then there is no way in hell you would write those two tweets and fire them out on a platform filled with hate and bigotry and stand by it today. Like the way that she says, the way that she tried to say something like, you know, whenever you think you're completely right, she kept repeating that. Whenever you think you're completely right, you're probably wrong. But then stood by those tweets and the way she delivered it, despite the harm and it caused, and despite the full like culture wars that it kicked off to this day, it's like the trans guests said themselves, yeah, there is need for nuanced conversations around some of these topics from experts, trans people, and those in the field. But like, none of those conversations are happening when someone posts like whoopin' on Twitter.
And just Twitter in general, I just think that the way that Twitter has eroded the brains of so many people is so insane to me. And I just think that like the division that people are having and why some people are having empathy with J.K. Rowling after this podcast is because there is obviously a big division between being able to hate someone clearly when they post a tweet and there's like this huge distance and sitting and hearing them speak. And I think people are mistaking that basic human empathy for like thinking that her perspective is valuable or has points to it. And I think that what she does on Twitter is align herself with people, very clearly align herself with people who have very radically anti-trans views, which she herself is very careful not to like verbalize exactly, but it's very clear from the way she's deciding to use that platform whose points she agrees with. And I think that's the thing that bothered me the most about the interviewer was this refusal to go a little bit deeper or push a bit deeper about the essence of what she actually believes. Because she would say things like, you know, I read Simone de Beauvoir and therefore I think sex is immutable. So it's like, okay, do you believe that like trans women deserve to be called women? Yeah. Yes or no? Exactly. Like that was never asked ever. And so it looks like she obfuscates from what her real opinions are by saying, I'm just worried that like we're transitioning children too young, or we shouldn't be giving puberty blockers at a certain age. And it's just like, you are the last person to weigh in on this conversation. Like trans children, like parents of trans children, doctors, like there's other people having these conversations. You do not need to be involved in it.
That's what really frustrated me, is that she kept being like, there is no conversation to be had. You know, it's like so authoritarian. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's just not fucking true.
That's just her experience being on Twitter.
Yeah, being on fucking Twitter. And it's also like, that's just not true in the world at all. If you go digging anywhere, trans people are so generous in how much they are willing to speak and willing to answer stupid questions. Like the two trans people who came on this podcast were like subjected to the most insane questions from Megan, which like proved to me how little she should be like hosting this podcast, and how little it's like she just couldn't challenge JK on these points because she doesn't know enough about the topic. It's like if we fucking went to interview JK Rowling on it, and it's like you're not gonna like get anywhere. There are conversations everywhere. There is like actual full studies and full statistics and full facts like completely showing that her bathroom theory, like her bathroom, like really scare tactory, fear mongering theory, is like either not true at all or like absolutely completely fringe, so much so that it's like, why are we focusing on this and not focusing on like how 70% of sexual assaults are by someone a woman knows? Like, is that not something you would rather focus on as being like an actual victim of like domestic violence?
And it's also just like the bathroom thing has always been such a logically confusing argument to me.
It's also so stupid. I'm like, do you think there's a man standing outside the bathroom being like, are you a man or a woman before you go in? Like if a man wants to go into a bathroom just to assault a woman, he's going to just go into the bathroom.
And you've never needed to, showcase or discuss your gender beforehand to get into a, like, it's just so, that whole argument is just fucking insane. like the self-ID laws in Scotland were like criticized. There's like, you know, proven to be some validity to how that should be executed. But again, they're like niche cases where like the legal logistics need to be ironed out.
Sorry, just go back to the no conversation thing, because I feel like she pushes that the whole time.
Yeah.
And she like, and I found it just so damaging how they basically were just playing clips from like saying that anytime feminists try to meet to talk about trans rights, there's like trans people with balaclavas like attacking them. That's what they literally had on the podcast. I'm like, people can take away from this podcast like the most insane stuff if they don't then go and do their own research. And like, yeah, there are just so many nuanced pieces, so many nuanced conversations about it from people who actually know. And like, for example, even just like if you listened to the podcast and didn't think about it or go to like, I don't know, question it, you wouldn't even see that ContraPoint's Natalie, who's like the most eloquent person and who really should have been speaking to JK Rowling directly, said it was a serious lapse of judgment to ever go on that podcast and like wrote this huge long piece about how damaging it is. And if these discussions do get heated, it's because it's like trans people are literally still fighting for their lives. Like, it is so dangerous to use these fringe cases to push this like anti-trans agenda. And it's so crazy to me that JK Rowling doesn't see her part in it at all. Like, she said she was literally like, someone messaged her saying that her speaking about these has meant that police are like less likely to investigate like this trans murder. And she was like, connect the dots. Like, how on earth? And I was like, what do you literally mean? Like, it is so easy to connect the dots between like how much more fuel your rhetoric has given this anti-trans movement and like actual like violence.
I think like to go back to the podcast, like having a reason for existence, it's worth explaining also like the context of how it was produced, because it's Barry Weiss, who's like a bit of a controversial figure. She was a Washington Post op-ed editor, and then she was brought over to the New York Times after Trump was elected because they were trying to like diversify their editorial staff more. And she ended up quitting like in a kind of huge blaze of glory last year or the year before, and wrote this like public resignation letter about how the New York Times had been co-opted by Twitter, and she's kind of really built a niche for herself as like critiquing quote unquote woke culture. And I just think this is another example in like the many list of people who I think would otherwise be very smart and brilliant and capable who've like kind of lost their brains on Twitter a little. She's launched a new news site called The Free Press. And the whole idea is that they'll go there and talk about things other people aren't willing to talk about. And like, this is their first big podcast that they've launched. And I think that that is all very intentional. And I think that what has happened is, because everything now on the internet, which I just hate and makes you want to just live in a hut, is that everything is so reactionary to something else. And it's like the only way people can, it's like the Substack economy. The only way that people can get noticed and make money for their opinions and like go outside the norm and blah, 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 is by saying something that feels red hot and outrageous and reactionary and willing to go there and say something that no one else will say. And this whole narrative of like free speech is dead and no one can have conversations anymore and there's no nuance in the world and JK Rowling gets like pilloried and ostracized from society for saying like basic facts that are, you know, not controversial. That is the reason that this podcast exists and they never would have pursued it or published it, and JK Rowling never would have agreed to an interview if it was going to ultimately prove that there was like merit to why people are angry with her. So I think that that to me just seeps through. As much as I do want to give the host, like, I think she was very well intentioned, and I know intentions aren't everything, and at the end of the day, like, the end product and its impact is what matters. I don't think it was done in this gotcha journalism cynical way, but I do think that this like obsession with wanting to call out and critique woke culture as like a new personal brand or as a new form of like making money is a huge part of like why this exists.
For sure.
And it's kind of interesting because I'm like I do feel, I think we've all felt before that there is validation to the fact that like people can't have nuanced conversations online, and like, you know, the platform of Twitter and Instagram is not a great place for having discussions. But I think we're kind of a few years into that, and most of us have have a pretty good sense of like what you see on Twitter doesn't reflect how the average person thinks or feels, and that people are far more capable of like interesting, yeah, nuanced thought than we appear to be online. So I almost feel like its own argument is kind of moot.
Yeah. I think just, my like main takeaway was just, if you care about the community you say you care about, there is no way you would have posted those tweets in the first place in that really uncaring, really harmful, really dangerous way, or stand by them now. And yeah, as you say, just like, I think it's just the way that she's, yeah, engaging with really, 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 really anti-trans people online, like retweeting posts from people whose views are crazy. And it's like, trans people are obviously seeing this. Like,
well, there was that whole thing in New Zealand. You probably saw that fucking Parker Posey or whatever her name is, lunatic, came to New Zealand to speak. And there was literally like neo-Nazis at her rally, and they did a salute on the steps of Melbourne Parliament. And JK Rowling was retweeting stuff in support of her and saying that she'd been viciously attacked for being a feminist in Australia. Like, that's where she stands on the issue. It's like a very sanitized, watered down version of her views that people heard in that podcast.
Exactly. Yeah, I genuinely don't believe her when she says she cares about trans people at all. I think what she does, and I think she does it really cleverly, and you know, she's an intelligent woman. I think what she's doing is she's dog whistling, because she's saying things outwardly and on this podcast and, you know, publicly that do appeal to women and to feminists, because we're like, God, well, we don't want a man being able to dress up as a woman and come into our space. Or she'll talk about, as we've already said, policies that trans people themselves have said are worth discussing. She's using those points to kind of make herself sound like she is in the right, and that what she's saying is valid and, you know, not crazy, and she's not a TERF and all of these things, because what she's pointing out on this podcast and publicly are things that people can in some ways agree with. But what she's doing is she's actually signaling to, as you say, like liking people on Twitter who have really, really strong, really public anti-trans views. She's signaling to this anti-trans movement, covertly, and refusing to answer really simple questions that, if you weren't a TERF, if you did truly believe in trans rights, you would be able to answer whether you believe trans women are women. You wouldn't accidentally call yourself a TERF at one point in the podcast, as she did, and you wouldn't interact with these people who have very strong, very hateful, very dangerous views towards trans people. And I think that's just like the bottom line of it all.
The best point that was made in that whole podcast was made by JK Rowling herself, which is, she said at the end, like, no one thinks they're a, you know, the character everyone hates the most in Harry Potter is Professor Umbridge. And the thing about her is, no one ever thinks that they're an Umbridge. Like, no one, everyone, when they're doing things that are harmful or spouting ideologies that are harmful, thinks that they're being righteous and good people, and that they're rallying for a cause, and that they're just being persecuted. And that was the interesting thing about all this, like, religious conversation. Like, they think they're being persecuted for trying to do the right thing for society, and they cannot see outside of it and see the harm they're doing. And J.K. Rowling so strongly believes that the people that critique her are the Umbridge, whereas, like, my biggest takeaway from the whole thing, I was like, this is just so ironic, because she just cannot get outside of herself and see it, and it's kind of tragic.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's, yeah.
Twitter has ruined so many people's, like, brains. I literally feel like it's like she sits in Twitter all day and just, like, gets fed this shit.
Yeah. She's in such a huge rabbit hole of, like, freaking out about the most insane things.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was a frustrating listen. And I think, yeah, always just like reminding ourselves of our privileges as cis white women in this, and like thinking about this from a trans perspective, you know, just how frustrating the whole thing would be for you to just have to listen to this when you're like, just to even to have to listen. I'm just like, God, like, you'd just be like banging your head against a wall because you're just like, we're literally fighting for like our basic human rights, and it just like the most marginalized community in the entire world, and this fucking author is still trying to say that she cares.
Or just still trying to paint herself as the victim of it. I think that's what's so interesting about this era is like people, because of Twitter, because you can be on the barrage end of like reading hate stuff about yourself, which I 100% think would be extremely, not just awful, but like traumatic and hideous. This like the dog pile that she's had and the nature of a lot of the stuff is fucked up. But I think, this inability to like see yourself and your level of power and the influence that you wield culturally and only see yourself as like, which is a very human thing, but like that fucking power comes with a huge amount of responsibility and that influence. So many people now, it feels like, are incapable of like separating their immediate feelings and reactions in the moment from like the broader implications that comes with the power that they have. And it's just a shame because she seems like an intelligent person.
Okay, we must wrap up a long, wielding conversation.
A serious episode.
Let me read out a couple of the other more chill ricks that aren't Wolf Creek or about J.K. Rowling briefly. So someone suggested Talk Easy, how author Jenny O'Dell discovered a life beyond the clock.
Love.
Where I also listened to a good episode on Today in Focus about AI and ChatGPT and everything. I feel like we should talk about ChatGPT next week.
Yeah, I'm actually so interested in it. Zach's always making it do dumb shit on my computer.
Well, this person on Today in Focus asked ChatGPT, fed ChatGPT all its favorite food and all his favorite food and all his favorite recipes and the recipes he likes to cook, and said, come up with a bunch of new things for me to cook at home this week. And he made really good recipes for him.
Yum.
So obviously I'm going to do that.
Yeah, it's special.
I want to ask ChatGPT to organize my day. Just be like, these are the things I have to get done in a day. I feel most...
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Motivated in the morning, but I also want to exercise in the morning, blah blah blah. This is how many times I need to eat and get him to make my schedule.
It was like the new Bing that they are unveiling, and it was like the best search engine fucking ever. So excited. Google, so shit.
Yeah, I also listened to an episode with the Google guy, and he was just like, didn't want to admit that they'd fucked up.
They haven't changed the formula for like 20 years. I'm sick of it.
I know. I still use it. Except for when they do like special things over Christmas and they'll put like a little Santa on the O. Okay.
Was that the only one? Talk easy.
Oh. So no, I just kind of then started talking about Today in Focus. Someone said Just the Gist. I'm just recommending stuff that I haven't listened to. The Imperfects. Celebrity Memoir Book Club episode about Yolanda's Lyme disease. Definitely need to listen to that.
Yes.
None of these could play with my boyfriend in the car, but yes.
Sadly. Okay, gorgeous. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.